Hour number three, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Thursday here at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Bar Lines, and continuing the fun with our man Greg Wyshynski, who joins us now, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Greg, what's up? How you doing?
I'm doing well. Can't complain. I published the quarter season look at my bold predictions from the preseason. And only a couple of them are stone-cold turds. Most of them are still in play. I regret to inform everyone that Jack Hughes will not play 82 games this season. But a lot of the other predictions that are on ESPN.com right now are pretty good.
Well, the one you have for the Nashville Predators as we sit is correct at this point. Andrew Brunette keeps his job. We kind of wondered after Sweden, you know, in the performance there, even though they won one game, what might happen. Barry Trotz is going to join our afternoon show at 4 o'clock today, so I'm curious to hear what he's going to say. But so far, Bruno is still the head coach of the Predators, and it feels like Barry, as we've talked about, is going to continue to be patient.
Patient, some votes of confidence. I saw the video that Barry did with Kyle Dubas, his counterpart in Pittsburgh, when they were in Sweden, and kind of indicated that Brunette's sort of part of the, I don't know if the solution is the right word, but part of what they're trying to do in Nashville. But again, like we talked about before, man, whether you believe that this team can still have enough runway to turn things around and Brunette's the guy to do it, or whether you believe it's a lost season, I still think it just makes too much sense to just keep the guy around, because otherwise, you're paying him not to coach. You're paying him to sit on the sidelines while someone else takes the reins of what's already a lost season. Better to have him just coach out the string, make a decision in the off season to go in a different direction. The only, like we talked about, I think it was last week, I mean, the only reason you might want to make a change is if you believe that Carl Taylor is the guy to go to down in the AHL. And you want to give him maybe a bit of runway to figure out the NHL as a head coach and get to know the roster. Like if that's the decision, then it makes a little bit more sense. But if it's just, you know, we don't think we've got it this year, and I just don't think firing the coach is really going to turn things around.
Yeah, I'm with you. I have been on the you can't change all the players, so you change the coach train. I mean, that's kind of where I've gotten to. But I have also prefaced it, as I think I have with you, of I know it's not all Andrew Brunette's fault, and Andrew Brunette's a good coach. Is he the right coach for this team? Barry's built the roster, so he has, you know, obviously some culpability here as well, but they're not a Pete DeBoer away from winning the Stanley Cup either. I think I know that. So, I mean, if they made the move and it wasn't Carl Taylor and it was Pete DeBoer or Peter Laviolette or whoever, or Barry Trotz, I still don't think they're that move away from going and maybe even making the playoffs. So, therefore, I can understand the logic of why Barry's standing pat, but I also understand the alternative at the same time.
You know who I'd love to be is Pete DeBoer. Like, this guy gets run out of Dallas because he can't win the big game and get them to play for a Stanley Cup. He throws his goalie under the bus. And so it's basically, we can't have you come back to the team because our franchise goalie was basically called out by you after losing a playoff series. And yet every single team that's off to a bad start is putting Pete DeBoer's name out there as maybe being the guy that can turn it around. It's pretty amazing. But what you said about Nashville is, I think, what's being said in a lot of places. Like, you talked to somebody in Toronto about, you know, the possibility of Craig Berube taking the fall for this Leafs team not being any good, and then they think about bringing in, you know, Pete DeBoer to coach a team, and ultimately it's kind of, well, this team's just not good enough. It doesn't matter if you bring in Pete DeBoer. They're not all of a sudden going to become a conference finalist because Pete DeBoer is behind the bench. And I think that's the same thing with Nashville. It's the same thing with Toronto. I think in some ways it's the same thing with Edmonton, even though they've been to the conference final in consecutive seasons and won it. There's a lot of teams that have some significant flaws that aren't going to be fixed by bringing in an accomplished coach.
Greg, what metric do you use to determine who's the worst team in hockey?
Points percentage. I think right now Calgary, even with their big win last night, that they can feel pretty good about is demonstrably the worst team in hockey. Yeah, I'd go points percentage, but then let's also back it up with some analytics. You know, where are they in expected goals? Where are they in expected goals against? If the standings tell you that they stink, and then the underlying numbers tell you, yeah, they actually really stink, then they're just a bad hockey team. So that's kind of the math I use on trying to figure out who is really the stinkers in this league.
How much do you put into goals scored, goals allowed, and all that? Because as a football guy from where I came from, I always look at that, you know, because you're giving up a lot. But, again, you could score some. I don't see how that translates into hockey in your mind.
Well, it's a good question because, like I said, I trust the analytics more than I do the actual numbers in that case. Like, I got to know that you're doing the things that you need to do in order to score or in order to prevent a goal. Because in hockey, as I think you were kind of indicating in the differences between the sports, there's so many variables that go into, you know, whether a team is successful or not. I mean, you know, sometimes it's just bad puck luck. It's pucks going off of, you know, the goal post. It's a bunch of guys skating around on Ginzu knives on a slick surface, and you never know right. What's going to happen. I mean, there are so many variables that go into whether or not a team scores a goal or prevents a goal. But we have the data to learn how many shot attempts they have versus how many they give up, to learn where the shots are coming from, to learn the quality of those chances, either offensively or defensively. We've gotten to the point where we can kind of glean whether a team is doing the things they need to do to succeed or if they're just porous. And I'll give you an example. Like, the Anaheim Ducks right now are great. Like, they're an offensive steamroller. They're atop the Pacific Division. But when you look under the hood, they're not a team that plays playoff quality defense at all. They're being bailed out by their goalie Lucas Dostal on most nights. And so you say to yourself, all right, it looks good on paper, it looks good in the standings, but when push comes to shove, like, if the offense goes into a slump, are they cooked for 2 weeks because they can't keep the puck out of their net?
Interesting. I just, you know, with the Preds win last Friday in Sweden, Stamkos gets that, and they just seem that punch is there. They're feeling good. Then they drop an egg on Sunday. It's just, this hockey team is so hard to read. There's just really no buzz about them. And all you hear about is, like, they got a lot of talent. They're just not very good. And I know that's not exactly how they are, but that's a perception we get here about the Predators.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't checked into their numbers overall lately to see where they are. I kind of liked the effort in the games in Sweden. I think they could. I know they didn't get the result they wanted in the second one, but they could hold their heads high a little bit. You know, it's just like you said, when you look at the roster, especially with the way some of the veteran guys haven't necessarily, you know, kept up to the standards that they've had previously. And it's not just Stamkos. So I mean, you know, you look at a guy like Brady Shea, for example, who hasn't played nearly as effectively as he has in different stops in his career. You know, like, overall, you look at the roster and you say to yourself, compared to the other teams that are currently in playoff positions or playing close to the bubble in the West, they're just not as good. And I think that's an argument that's hard to refute at this point.
Greg Wyshynski is with us. So I'll ask it this way. Looking at where they are right now, you know, we've talked about Stamkos, that, you know, he doesn't have a Braden Point or a Kucherov on this team to set him up like he had in Tampa Bay. You know, Forsberg, I would say, kind of needs somebody like that too. So would it behoove the Predators to try and acquire a playmaking forward, albeit that's easier said than done, or based on the plan and everything that Barry has said to this point, does that not make sense and you just have to be patient and wait for the future?
I think it makes sense, but you know, you've got to find the right fit and the right player that's not going to, you know, ultimately cost you too many future assets to acquire them. You know, the Washington Capitals, to me, have become the model for what teams that are trying to, in the words of Barry Trotz, I guess, retool, you know, are trying to do. They went out and made some really smart acquisitions of guys that maybe their stock was a bit down. I mean, Dylan Strome was not a guy that was mentioned in the pantheon of number one centers in this league, but you look at what he's done for the Capitals since he's got there, and he's been exemplary on the offensive end. Granted, playing with Ovechkin certainly helps your numbers, but I mean, you know, he's kind of put up Nick Backstrom-esque numbers in some of these seasons that he's been in Washington. So, like, if you're able to identify players and be effective playmakers that aren't currently, you know, in a number one spot, that aren't cost you a first-round pick, like, go ahead and bring it onto the team, but you've got to be smart about it because, you know, otherwise you might be throwing bad money after bad money, as they say in the business community. You know what I'm saying? Like, if the company's failing, don't reinvest in it. Unless you're a fake tree planting company with the LA Clippers, then I guess you just keep pouring money into it.
That works out. Greg, we have a saying around here. There's some legendary high school football programs that have been not good for a long time, but when they're good, Chase and I always say, it's always good for high school football when these teams are good. I look at the Detroit Red Wings, sitting at the top right now of the Atlantic. Is hockey better when the Red Wings are good?
It is, but I'll do you one better. And I don't think the fans in Nashville are going to like to hear this one, actually. But I used to think that Detroit being good was very important when they were in the West, because I think it's important to have a strong traditional hockey market in the West. So when you do have some of these teams that might not necessarily have the same kind of national appeal come into town and play on national television, you're going to get a huge local audience for those established teams, no matter what the other team is. And so Detroit always served that purpose really well back in the Lindstrom days and the Yzerman days. Now, since they've been in the East, the team that had to serve that purpose was the Chicago Blackhawks. So I'd say it's more encouraging to the NHL to have the Blackhawks all of a sudden be relevant again, thanks to Connor Bedard and thanks to the goaltending of Spencer Knight, because now all of a sudden, you know, when they play Vegas, when they play Edmonton, when they play Colorado, like, now that becomes an event where, you know, one of the biggest sports markets in the country, their team is playing good hockey again, and they have a young star, and there's going to be much more attention on those games than there would have been otherwise. So Detroit being good, it's great. It's my favorite uniform in hockey. I wish them well, but for the betterment of the league, I think it's more important to have Chicago going well again.
Greg, appreciate it as always. We will talk to you next week.
Anytime. Thanks.
Greg Wyshynski joins us, senior NHL writer from ESPN, every Thursday at 2 o'clock. And, of course, he is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. We'll react to some of that and much more live from the Omni today here at 102.5 The Game.